9, the 9.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning into KBOO Portland.
Too many birds in one tree. Too many birds in one tree.
Welcome to The Occasion. I'm your host, Jennifer Perrine, and this is episode 7. The Occasion is a themed poetry show featuring interviews with poets who offer a selection of their greatest hits, read poems written specifically for the occasion of the show, and recommend some of their favorite poems by other authors. So a little of something old, something new, something borrowed, and something true. It's August 2020, and the theme for this month is reunion. Our guest tonight is Emily Kendall Fry. Emily is the author of several books, chapbooks, and chapbook collaborations, including The Grief Performance and Sorrow Arrow, which won the Oregon Book Award. She is a practicing psychotherapist and lives in Portland, Oregon. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you. So good to be here.
Glad to have you on the show. So this month's theme is reunion, and I'm hoping you can start us off with a poem or maybe a couple of poems of yours so we can hear how that theme has shown up in your poetry in the past.
Sure. So I won't say too much about it, but I love this theme of reunion. I think of it as like re-upping in a way, reuniting. I thought of it as again being with. So that's sort of how I'm feeling into it that way. All the ways personally and collectively, I think too, we're kind of reuniting or uniting with maybe for the first time, like what matters. So, I mean, I think it's an important moment for sure. Yeah. So this is called The Sad Side of Spring. And it's going to come out sometime in the next few months in The Believer, which I feel really grateful to Jericho Brown for accepting it. Yeah. The Sad Side of Spring. Next to the ocean, I know I am dying. Early this morning, the adjoining wall of our dreams collapsed. When I drive through a forest, I don't stop. Come back to the city, smeared, and nothing gets it off. I don't intend to know who I am. Ocean, pulsing white pith. Don't be sad if someone dies. They saw it coming at least a beat before you did. No tether to my bloom, the root hung, I did not know who I was. I escaped the smallest opening, an octopus squeezing her body through. They put barbed wire around tents under the freeway. The city is deciding where people can live. I used to pick you up from work 8 miles north. I never went in. Coffee spilled on my lap. I lived in my hope. It flowed through my body. On the roads I took, a giant, ugly stain. Landlords, landowners, those who have claimed power, beating its drug in their glass chests. Someone put God in those camellias. People love you. They can't help it. No longer does the vibrating clit of anger get me off. My head is tight with mystery, not yet exploded. We bought sausages, burned them to a good taste. I forgot my swimsuit, walked down to the ocean, past a pile of dead bees. Becoming a cloud means more available vastness. Growing up is not the same as waking up. I used to live in a place that hurt, mostly because of the trees I was wedged between. I've loved a few people who refused to exercise the human condition. They sat inside the cave near the opening with drying fur, never dry. I cut a star from the moon's middle, made a life bigger than my inherited fear. Safeway and stinging nettles, last kid left in the parking lot. Hurt tomorrow with my grip on infinity, picked flowers from dents, flung them down. In the grief circle, I decorate a box with the cosmos. When it falls open, oh, I say, forgive me. The woman across from me has eyes so kind, I'm almost angry. God is either inside or outside this room. No one chose what they came with. Now we sit and pretend to let it go. I am late to my life. Why is the neighborhood still alive with exes? Our coping mechanisms are alienating us from the planet. Capes of ash warming an ancient fire. Send an alert. I've revised several of my stances. Dreamed mushrooms grew on a past life. I cut them in pieces, ate. Technology invented nostalgia. Sepia dreams with soundtracks. Now hats can't be worn without irony. I'm wasting a lot of good sorrow on this relationship. I think I'll stop there because it's a little bit longer, but that's you get the sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad side of spring.
I'm so curious about so many pieces of that. So you started by talking about reunion as re-upping and being with again. And
mm-hmm.
there are these really sort of profound images in the poem of, I think of them as images of division, like both division, I suppose, and also reunion, like the adjoining wall of our dreams collapsed. And then that image of the barbed wire in the city is deciding where people will live. And I'm just curious how you're thinking about some of those concepts of, I think, maybe very literal kinds of divisions that we're seeing or experiencing, and the kind of opportunities for reunion or re-upping that you're seeing
in
those things.
Yeah. Well, I think poetry, you know, is such a great opportunity for a self to encounter the world. And so I love poems. I love to read poems that invite me to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I think often the speaker in my poems is sort of weaving back and forth between like the internal self and the self that exists as part of things. And I just think now is a particularly potent moment with COVID and, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement getting so big, and rightfully so, for people to kind of be in that place with more intention and with more support. And I think it's cool. I always think it's cool that poetry might be a part of that.
Are you thinking of that mostly in terms of like an awareness of self? Like, I think about the lines in, or is it sort of a broad context, like the lines in that poem that you just read about, where they, I don't intend to know who I am, and I did, and also I did not know who I was, you know, those are fascinating, especially in this moment of like reckoning and with so many that,
like
the intention to know oneself or not.
Right, so just that right there, like that question around like, should we know who we are? I mean, for me as a white identified person, right, like yes. Yes, I should, right? Like, and then also the part of me, the self, who is wants to not claim identity, or wants to be a self who's moving around and mutable and permeable and doesn't have to do that or name that, also exists. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's right. Like thinking about the person who wrote that poem and then the person I am now, I think that's the responsibility of knowing the self, right? And all and the self, the responsibility of knowing who you are and how that exists in the different dimensions that you exist in, I think is an important one.
I appreciated what you said there, because it's the importance of knowing that and knowing its sort of its history and its position, and also knowing that the self can be mutable, can be there's possibility there, and so not wanting to know as in it making it static because you know it. Like, I think that's a good
exactly question. Yeah. Or how do I or what's my intention in claiming I don't want to know who I am? Like, how does the poem unfold from there? Or what am I, how am I using that then as an intention? What would be the pros and cons of, you know, of being committed to not knowing who you are? And how does that again show up as someone with different privileges, like being a white person,
right,
for example? Is that okay? Is that not okay?
Kind of early during the COVID pandemic, I'd been reading these poems that you were posting that were sort of scaffolds of poems,
and
posting them to social media. And for folks who are listening to this who didn't see them, they're poems with blank spots in them to be filled in. So it's sort of an invitation to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, you know, what spurred you to make and share those?
Well, it's continuing with what we're already talking about. Like, I'm always interested in how can I invite the world more into my work. And I want to create spaces where something can happen that is mysterious and correct. And so, you know, I think that the poet or the writer or the teacher, the therapist, the whoever, is just half of every interaction. And so I'm always interested in how will I use my half of the interaction in a way that can allow for the most potential, the most whatever from the other half. So I'm always frustrated with poetry for how contained it is, even though it can contain vastness.
Right.
You know, like sometimes that just irks me, like, gosh, how can I like open up this space even more? And so I think writing blanks into poems is one way I'm experimenting with, or inviting the, it's not even reader, inviting the world in is one way.
When you talk about poetry feeling or being contained, what is that about? How does that show up?
I think it's just, especially now, you know, when we're trapped in our homes, it's like, I want to know who's out there, mm-hmm. right? Like at a reading, at least I can look at the audience or I can look at the other people there and like really feel into the fact of their existence. It's a conversation more, but I think a poem on the page can feel so lonely. Like mm-hmm. It's also just my personality. Like I'm not interested in monologues. I want the completion of the response. Like the worst agony in the world to me is publishing a book of poems and then that year or so when you don't hear anything.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Thinking about how exciting that moment is when somebody reaches out and it's like, oh, yes. I really enjoyed this, or even I'm critical of it, but like,
I read it and I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So even if the person in the audience is frowning and they really aren't into me, that's fine. Because, you know, something has happened, that energy exchange.
What kind of response did you get to those?
Oh, it's amazing. Someone would always do it, like fill in the blanks and send it back to me in some capacity. And I tried to post them, you know, on Instagram when that happened. I don't know. Sometimes I want to, like, I think I want to make a book of these, or maybe I want to make a book of just one with all the different iterations that people send to me. I don't know, but I definitely want to keep putting them out there.
So is it something that you're thinking you'll continue to do as distant from each other?
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. I stopped doing them for a while. I think I wasn't feeling, I was like, for a few months, just like whirling around in my intense white fragility moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Like, just really, you know, which is good. It's appropriate. I'm glad to do it. But it was also like, whoa, like I was just really in that muck. And so I wasn't feeling as like it was important for me to be making those offerings, but I they're kind of coming back.
I can see how it would be hard to let other people in during that.
Yeah.
Like I want to invite your voices and you probably don't want any part of it. What's happening?
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. I am not the place that should be generating the things.
Did you want to share a couple
or
just so that we can get a feel for what these?
Yeah. Are. So I'm always experimenting with how to read these out loud, but since you can see me, but since the listeners can't see me, I kind of just like make this pause, an extended pause when there's a blank, and you can just imagine that there's a fairly long sort of Mad Libs length blank on the page when you're hearing that pause. Okay, we'll see how this goes. This is called It May Look Like You've Gone Nowhere. This morning you woke up an army of selves ready to. Who do you send in? Dream water next to the bed, the soaked in innumerable pink blossoms shouting. There's still a lot. A memory floats down. How are you choosing or not choosing? While a mirror, a word, a petal cultivates. I keep my face to a template. I tend my time to. So that's one.
That was great.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had an opportunity to read these out loud?
I have just a tiniest bit, but I'm totally open to any feedback.
Just in being an audience to that, it was fascinating how hard it was. Unlike, so typically when I'm listening to poems, I just latch on to different phrases or bits of language and keep those. And it was so difficult because my mind was just filling in the blanks the whole time.
That all
I kept were my own responses and not the language of your poem, which is
awesome.
So strange, like, and wonderful, right?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Do you remember any blanks that you filled in that you like kind of like that stuck you?
The couple that I remember, was right after there was a phrase about petals early on and what they were shouting.
Yeah.
And so the phrase was, "Here I am." And then heard in my head, there's still a lot to give away. There's still a lot to slough off. So it was
I love that. So is it, there's still a lot to give away, sort of like comma
to slough off.
A lot to slough off. Yeah. And then I like how that fits with the next line, which is, "A memory floats down."
Oh, this is great. I could do this all day.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Because you sort of opened up this particular project and shared that poem, I was curious.
Yeah.
I know that you've co-written a couple of chapbooks, and I'm curious if the impulse to collaborate with other writers was a similar impulse to what led to this project, or if that was something different that sparked those those projects or those poems.
Yes, I mean, yes, absolutely, same impulse. Yes. Yeah, it's not that I don't have faith, but I'm just kind of bored by my own mind. Like, I'm interested in my own mind and my own experience enough to write, but I'm not convinced that I'm seeing everything, that I'm experiencing everything, that I even can experience my own experience well. You know? So it's like, why not involve others? Or, you know, why not see what happens when more people are contributing to the project of this, whatever this art we're making in the moment.
Yeah.
I taught for a while at the IPRC in the certificate program. I taught the poetry track, and one of the most like ecstatically joyful parts of every workshop was writing a collaborative poem together at the end of the meeting. Yeah, there's just something so uniquely bonding about contributing to a poem together. Yeah, I love it. I don't always love what it makes, but I love the process.
Is collaborating with other writers outside of these sort of fill in the blank poems, is it something that's still part of your process?
Not as much. I mean, I try to get my partner to write with me sometimes, and he will reluctantly make poems, but I feel open to it. What is time? I don't feel like I have the time to give that the space that it would deserve, you know, to really work that way with another person. But I love it, and I think it's pretty much the most fun thing.
For those just joining us, you're listening to The Occasion on KBOO Portland. I'm Jennifer Perrine, and we're talking with Emily Kendall Fry. I asked Emily to write a poem specifically for the occasion of the show, and she's got a couple of different things that she might share with us.
It's so hard to write on demand, don't you think?
It is. I think it's part
it's
of
so
why
weird.
I asked people to do this for the show.
I know.
It's like this strange challenge.
I know. It's amazing. You can something really happens when you're asked to write about a certain thing.
Yeah.
It's cool though. Okay, so I make no great claims about these drafts, but this is my, I'll read every little blip as its own poem. So, reunion. Some people we love more than there are. You bump along a wall of fruit skin. In a dream, you know you're in. The room is your parents, a comfort as they rot, slowly furring the edge. So that's attempt one. Reunion. Loneliness is a yellow boat. The grandma across the street has great style. She's floating, slowly floating. The steps, in three distinct mustards. I couldn't describe her face if asked, but I know a bit about the waves she makes in space. The plants on our street are moving into their dry aspect. They've reached so high into summer, they look burned. It's weird to be alive and love what will definitely die. I can only see the neighbor because of the distance between us. Her daughter and her daughter tend the garden, big white blooms. I guess I don't love them, or I would move, put myself in the picture. I love my mom in chicken thighs, a salad. I close my eyes just a little when looking, try not to see everything. Reunion. You wake up in the light right where you left it. Your dreams scatter like rice. In the park, people are crushing grass, moving the perfect balance of air as if that were freedom. We let the trees hold us like parents we never had. A kid with a Spider-Man mask approaches. Reunion. The pond is covered in electric green scum. Life's the place we get nature lessons. A person and their personal trainer partner are training. My tattoo is eating all bad auras. Get close to me and the lion bites down. Everyone alive has beaten the odds. An old friend walks past me. I say hi with my memory. Remember when life was a series of circles not touching? And now your hands belong to someone else. The bed where you slept as a child is a sacred object. Those are my tries.
They feel like more than drafts.
Okay. Yeah. I liked it all together like that.
Yeah. And yeah. There's something, I think especially I feel like it was the second one and the fourth one. There were certain kinds of, I don't know, themes maybe that were yeah. starting to bump up against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe part of it is the moment that we're in, but also just thematically, maybe it's something that you're drawn to. I think there were lines about, you know, it's weird to be alive and love what will definitely die. Yeah. And then later on in one of the later drafts, it was everyone alive has beaten the odds. And it's, yeah, just the recognition that we're all always dying, and that's part of
that's right.
life.
Yes.
And that seems threaded throughout these. I guess I'm curious if that's something that you were thinking of specifically in relationship to that concept of reunion, or if it's just flowing in because of other things that are happening or part of like what you focus on as a poet, regardless.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I really do love to write about death because. Mm. I mean, I am a poet, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm a therapist also, so there we go. It's like, I've covered the bases. But yeah, so I think those themes show up definitely always, but I don't know how to articulate it better than you did. I think you said it really well. Like it's something about this moment, mm-hmm. listening to a poem, or maybe listening to anyone talk about death feels different in this particular moment that we're alive in. Yeah. I just feel really tender. I feel, and maybe it's aging too, but I just feel really tender about this shot I have at life. So reunion, again, with that re-upping or that relationship to self and other, right? It's like every day is somewhat of a reunion with this life thing. Like, oh my gosh, I'm still here. And who else is here? And what a deep, deep privilege.
And I think that shows up in your poems too, that because in another one of the drafts, there was, I think it started with, you wake up in the light, right, and the light is right where you left it. And so are all the other, you know, all the other people, all the things that we, you know, can be in relationship to and experience. That's right. And we've got one more shot every day.
That's it. Exactly. Exactly. Whether you realize it or not.
As you were writing those, you brought up how this is sort of like a strange thing that I ask people to do. And like, what was it? And strange was my word, not your word. but what was it like to try to sort of respond to it in these different kind of ways? Like, mm-hmm. I think so far, most of the people that I've talked to, they've come to it with a, you know, here's what I came together with. This is the final version. And you
know,
all these, like, sort of different, like, threads that are that are each really powerful in different ways, and that also kind of draw together. And so I'm just curious about your process and what it was like for you to try to write to this reunion.
Well, you might be able to tell from the different drafts, I spent a lot of time in parks just sort of looking around. I use a not very exciting method to write poems, where I just set a timer for 10 minutes 20 minutes and just see what happens, like in a free write kind of way. I won't stop writing, and then I cull the poem from that. I find that easier to do lately, like in nature. Feels more abundant. I feel maybe less of me, more of the world. That constant question, where am I, where is the world? I feel like I've honestly barely scratched the surface. Like, I wish we could have another one of these in another month, because it's such a good theme. I think I'm just beginning to have my very beginning understanding of what it means for me, like in an embodied way. Like, what is this reunion thing? What is union? What is re? I just think it's so potent. I don't know if that speaks to my process. What was my process? My process was, like it always is when I feel like writing or need to write, is I feel deeply resistant. Like, no, I can't. That's the worst idea ever. You know, like, that's going to hurt me. I can't. Couldn't possibly do that. Or why would I even think I could do that? Or, ugh, gross. And then, then I do it. And then I feel like, all right, that was all right. Or I feel grateful to the capacity to do that thing called writing. I don't always feel like proud or excited or whatever, but I feel like, yeah, you did it. You did a hard thing. Because I do think writing is very hard, very difficult. I admire anyone who writes anything ever.
I know everyone's different, but it's hard for me to imagine a writer who doesn't also come to the process horrified and like, why am I doing this to myself? And why would I choose this thing? Or
exactly.
And it does all, like, it doesn't always create something magical and wonderful, but it always does.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. I am capable of making
exactly
a thing.
You existed, and you named something about that existence, and there's something to that, like there's something to that intention and to that presence that's valuable, even if you don't like what came from it. But I do like this. I do like what came from it.
I was going to ask you, because you brought it up at a couple different points about being a therapist, and how or whether that connects with your work as a writer, or how your work as a writer influences or connects to your work as a therapist.
Yeah, they feel intimately connected, because it's really drawing on similar, I don't know if capacities is the right word, but it's something about getting still and observing and being willing to stick around for what shows up. So I think being a writer is, like, in many ways, you know, just training yourself to tolerate letting whatever come through and with some faith that maybe something will come through that's meaningful or can be shaped into art. And it's pretty similar with counseling, I think, on both sides, you know, just any kind of healing, I would say, actually, where you're showing up with a willingness to face what is and observe it and say, this is how it was. And this is how it feels, you know, this is the impact. This is the world I'm living in. Yeah, I'm so pleased. I'm actually really pleased at how the skills connect. Yeah, in just, it's like a place of deep inquiry, I would say, in both.
And you were writing first before you became a therapist. That's correct.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I taught poetry and composition for, I think, 7 years, maybe 8 years. And then actually, I always wanted to be a therapist because I just love therapy so much and I love all my therapists. But and then I noticed actually that during conferences, like when you teach English, you know, you have to do like a million conferences with your students, which is fine. But we were not talking about sentences, right? We were talking about life.
Yes, yeah. That is true.
Yeah, yeah. So I think slowly it dawned on me, like, maybe I'm going to go do that now. Like, talk to people about life and see if I can keep writing poems.
I'm glad that it ended up feeling like it's that the skills are transferable. That doesn't seem like the right word, but
yeah. I mean, I was definitely worried because I'm curious what you think, but my sense is that, I mean, depending on who you are, of course, but most people living in this culture are sort of taught, like, you can be one thing, right? Like, better pick your thing. If you're lucky, you can be one thing, right? It's like kind of unheard of to be like, I want to be two things or seven things or, you know?
Yeah.
So I really had that conditioning that was like, made me really fearful to like give up my one thing because I really liked my one thing.
Yeah. Especially with writing, I think there's, to be a professional writer and to be a professional teacher are so closely wedded that I know in my experience that I taught writing for a long time. And when I decided, I still do that, but I also do lots of other things and have done lots of other things. And when I decided to step away from it, a lot of people were like, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? I also told myself that a lot. I was like, who do you think you are being able to step away from this thing? So,
That's so messed up. Yeah. You should be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I think probably lots of people in lots of other spaces experience the same thing. You start to do something well. Exactly. And then if you want to do something else also, I think there's an idea of mastery, maybe, that like once you've or become good at something, that why would you want to try something else? And
exactly,
that always feels like the exciting part to me.
Trying something else.
Yeah, trying something else. Yeah. I'm going to probably flounder a lot before I get good at it.
Totally, totally. It was so scary. Yeah, it's so scary to try something else, but exciting. Yeah, I think it seemed like some people almost felt glee about it. Like, oh, so you failed at being a poet, you know? And I was like, no, plus that was never the goal. So, you know,
And you did not fail because you've got a new book coming out, yes?
That's so true.
Not that that's like the marker of success.
Yeah.
But it is an indication that you've continued to write for a
while. I have. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Can't stop me. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the new book that's coming out?
Oh, sure. This book is a collection of maybe some a little bit longer poems. So I think I published my last book in 2014. So this would be sort of longish poems that have emerged in the last 6 years or so. Yeah, and I'd say like half the book, a third maybe, is one poem called I Became Less Acceptable to Those in Power.
Ooh.
And that was really fun to write. I'd say the last 2 or 3 years have been taken up with that project because I'm so unacceptable. So I'm just enjoying yelling about that. Yeah, so that's, I'm not sure what the book will be called.
Do you know when people can expect it to be out?
Oh, yeah. I think by AWP, I don't know if AWP will happen, but maybe like in the springtime, that's the hope. Yeah, like March or April of 2021. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited to read that poem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can send you some.
That title feels like an invitation to, in the same way that those other, the fill in the blank poems, it feels like that as a title could be an invitation for anybody to just like
exactly
to live and to write differently.
Right, to resonate. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I mean, I'll also say this is not in any way whatever. I have many manuscripts. Like, I don't know how it's happened, but I just have a, maybe because it hasn't been, I haven't worked that hard on submitting them, or, you know, I need to do that more. I need to work on the shaping of the book kind of part of the process. I'm much more generative, but I do have like four other manuscripts in case anyone's listening who wants them. Please help me. It's like too much. I don't know. I'm curious about your process with that. Like, you know how like you just accumulate work. Like, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to try to publish that? Or are we supposed to say like at a certain point it's you're past your prime, like it's rotted in some way?
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like for other poets. I actually don't ask people about this very much, but for me, you know, something will start to coalesce as a book. So I'll start to get a sense of like, oh, these poems all sort of carry a similar kind of weight or feeling. And then I'll shape that into a book. But then there's always like just as many other poems that I've written during that time that I think, okay, these are pretty good. And maybe something could happen with them, but I never try to do anything with them. I just, I'm like, well, all right, those were fun. Or not fun, but I did them, and now they're part of my past. But I've never thought about revisiting them and trying to.
So they exist sort of like as the byproduct of this other project that kind of. Yeah, I think that's true for me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I actually have a document where
it
lists them as like other things that happened while I was writing this book.
That's such a good title. So those aren't their own manuscript then? They're just like a document?
Yeah, it's just the titles of those poems so that I remember that like that's what I was also doing during that time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I probably maybe I'm just not ambitious enough to go back and turn them into a book.
But what if those like that's where I sort of go down the rabbit hole, because then what if the project poems are like not the great ones, but the sidelined ones are the real. I don't know. I sometimes when I have made a manuscript, I think, I don't know if this is, why did I give this so much attention?
I think about that too sometimes. Think about like that they're the trimmings, like the leftover cloth or dough or whatever. And I think they'll be fashioned into something. Like these could be something that are, I don't know, may have be more interesting than whatever.
Yeah.
Actually
together,
but
me too.
The world will never know.
We'll just sit there on our computers.
Yeah.
That's okay.
For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Occasion on KBOO Portland. I'm Jennifer Perrine, and we're talking with Emily Kendall Fry. So Emily, you brought some poems by other poets, right?
Yeah. Let's see. I love this book by Lauren Hunter called Human Achievements. It's on Birds LLC. I also love Lauren Hunter and the Human. And this poem's called I Am Warm and Powerful. This happens when I am between asleep and you. When my hair is wet, call me hurricane, I answer to anything. These warm waters feed my frenzy. Be kind to me. It has no bearing on your survival. Put me in the car. I need constant motion. I am a still, still thing. I need to be pressed back inside my borders Every night I come with only these instructions. Expect southern weather.
What drew you to that poem as you were thinking about reading?
Well, it's something I spoke to earlier. It's that navigation between, you know, self and other. And I love that assertion. I am warm and powerful. And it felt to me like when I read the title, I thought, oh, this is a reunion with self mm-hmm. poem. But then I just like how it goes to these other places. I need to be pressed back inside my borders.
I think that was my favorite line in the poem.
Yeah.
Because it both suggests like wanting that containment and also defying it.
Exactly. It feels like the speaker's sort of throwing you a bone because mm-hmm. they're already warm and powerful.
But
maybe going back in memory or into the spaces when they weren't as much, and just sort of, there's sort of a neutrality and like a refusal to decide that I really appreciate.
Do you want to read another one?
Yes. This is from Be With by Forrest Gander. Do you know this book?
I do. Yeah.
It's oh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I really recommend this long poem called Ruth that is about the poet's mother. But here's just one section from that long poem. To plunge into love as into a sidewalk, came awake as though I were a siren going off. The ghastliness of putting food in my mouth, my belly gurgling like so many horse leeches. And so days to come will crack open without you, dropping their yolk over places you walked. And the white, lowly primrose will foam wild like some scrap of your happiness refusing to abandon me. Blah, blah. The mirror in the shrine is memory. All you lived adjusts now and is lived back in me here on earth. A flock of geese sifts through the barrow pit, post-puke acid sears my throat. Maybe hard, I don't know. Is it hard to hear out of context with the rest of the poem, or could you receive that as its own poem?
I don't know.
What was that like?
So, like, remembering back to the full poem, that part felt, I don't know, more... I think because of the image, the word that's coming to mind is acidic than the rest of the poem.
Yeah.
Like it's more biting,
gross.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear it separated from the rest of it.
Yeah. Which is perhaps more like reverent or,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think though, this is getting at something about reunion that I appreciate, which is that, you know, like if you think about your high school reunion or I don't know, I think there's so much about reunion that's fraught.
Yes.
Right? Like it's not only a good thing, like reuniting with family or with memory is kind of gross and sad and disgusting and disappointing at times. And so I think, yeah, there's something about that I think this poem explores.
I think that's a great way of putting it. I think reunions can feel idealized.
Yes, that's but, it.
I mean, both yeah. the reunion, like sort of like high school reunion is a great example of idealizing. But like idealizing any kind of, like even reunion with self, like it matters, and also it's going to be kind of disgusting probably if you're being
exactly.
honest in the process.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
I like that. I know you brought a few other poems to read. Do you want to talk about some of the other ones that you were looking at or thinking about?
So I have many Lucille Clifton poems I could read. I don't know exactly how to connect it well to reunion, but I was trying to find, so I'm in this Toni Morrison book club and all we read is Toni Morrison.
Oh.
Yeah. It's really amazing. But We read Sula recently, and I wanted to find the part. I couldn't find my copy, but there's a part in Sula where Sula and Nell, the two sort of main characters, are reunited, and I kind of wanted to find that and read that. I think there's so much good reunion, good coming apart and coming back together in Toni Morrison.
Yeah.
And just, you know, in right, like so many ways she pulls something apart and then sort of slowly weaves you back. And then I have this book called The Homeboy Songs by Robert Lashley. He's a Pacific Northwest poet. I don't know where he's, I know he lived in Portland for a while. I think he's from Tacoma. Okay. He has some good poems. And then I have this book. I don't know how you say it. Kokomo. But it's like spread out on the cover, but Kokomo, yeah. By Laura Theobald, which has some cool poems. Could I just read a little short one?
Sure.
Okay. If we're completely quiet, we can understand each other. A moment ago, I thought about dying, but when I looked at you, it seemed all right. I'm going deeper inside myself and deeper into this apartment. I've got my favorite stuffed animal. Tomorrow we'll rearrange the furniture. There will be a little table next to my favorite chair and some plants. So, yeah. I mean, there can be a lighter, more human, more embodied reunion too.
Those are great. So if anybody's interested in reading more, kind of digging in to possibilities.
I mean, novels. Read a novel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Start with any Toni Morrison novel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're set.
Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of those poems or Toni Morrison's work, are there other artists or creators or people who have influenced either your writing or your thinking about that concept of reunion, particularly in some of the ways that you've talked about it in relationship to your writing?
Yeah. Well, I read this great book that everyone's reading right now called My Grandmother's Hands. And he's talking about racialized trauma and how it shows up in all bodies. And I feel like I've experienced a reunion of sorts. Maybe it's a reckoning would be a better word, with like that I'm in this white body. I know that I'm in this white body, but to experience it in a somatic way and in an embodied way, it's a lot of what I'm practicing, feeling into, is like, how does my conditioning as a white person like show up in my body? And how can I be fully accountable for that as much as I can, knowing that I'm unconscious also, because that's part of the conditioning. So it's like really an uncomfortable reunion, I'd say, with my whiteness, but one I'm deeply grateful for, you know? So I'd say also there's some people I'm listening to that I feel really grateful to, like Sonia Renee Taylor, who wrote a book called The Body is Not an Apology. It has a really wonderful Instagram presence. Just trying to listen and then do the work of really feeling into my existence this new way. And I think it's important as I'm a therapist also, because I do hold that space.
Yeah.
So I'm really asking myself to show up just in a better, just always try to do a little better there.
As you're thinking about that, or maybe not even thinking, as you're experiencing that shift,
yeah,
maybe even in small kinds of ways, like how does that show up in terms of how you hold space for people?
For my clients?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I'll say this with the caveat that I don't know very much about it yet,
yeah,
right? Like I thought I knew, or I thought I had done a bunch of racial justice work, but now I'm like, oh, okay, wow, no, you know, let's keep at it, right? So I want to just say, just at the beginning of my path in certain ways. Yeah. So it's a lot of intention and seeking guidance, like seeking consultation, seeking feedback, seeking supervision specifically around what does it mean to be a white therapist. But I will say Well, like Res Momenticum's book has a series of exercises that you work through to sort of feel into your body. And I think that helps. I think any somatic practice like yoga, walking, meditating, journaling, writing, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can intentionally work an edge around race and notice what's happening in your body. And I think that helps with my clients because a big part of what I'm told that white people do is take up space in unconscious ways. So the more I can be aware of myself and what I'm bringing to a situation, the more potential there's for me to not do that. Or just to be aware, what am I bringing here?
Yeah.
What is this?
Well, I think those are great things to share too, just with a broader audience who might be interested in,
yes,
you know, outside of, you know, you're doing it professionally, but like we're all at different times holding space for people in different ways. And I think
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Really helpful. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm so glad. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it does like to go back to your question, it does connect to the writing, right? Like everything's just of a piece. It's all one thing. It's like,
It's reunited.
It's reunited. There it is. There it is.
Emily, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And thank you for being a guest on the occasion. And thanks to everyone out there listening. And may you all be safe and healthy and kind to yourselves and to each other. And take care and good night.
Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, they're talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, it sounds. Starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're celebrating our Witter Binner Fellows for 2012. They were chosen by Poet Laureate Philip Levine, the 18th Poet Laureate of the United States. And here is Sheila Black, Witter Binner Fellow, with a poem.
Thanks, Grace. I'm going to read a poem called What You Mourn. It was put into the anthology Beauty as a Verb that I co-edited with Jennifer Bartlett and Mike Northern. And it was, well, it was the first poem I wrote about having a disability ever, so